Abolition. Abolition.
Old King Cotton. Old King Cotton, old man Cotton, keeps us slavin' till we's dead and rotten. Bosses us round in his honory way. Cotton needs picking, the hell he say. Starves us with bumper crops, starves us with poe, chains the lean wolf at our dough. Tired of cone-pone pork and greens, fatback and sorghum and dried-up beans. Buy one rusty mule to get ahead, we stays in debt until we's dead. If flood don't get us, it's the damn boll weevil, crap grass in the drought or something else evil. If we gets the bales when the hard luck's gone, bill at the commissary goes right on. Some planters goes broke and some gets well, but they sits on their bottoms feeling swell, and us in the crap grass catching hell. Cotton, cotton, all we know. Plant cotton, hoe it, beg it to grow. What good it do to us, God only knows.
Cotton music, not that bottle popping music. It's that break and freeze, slavery was not an option music. Not that Dr. Seuss's opportunist kindergarten music. It's that 90s clue mix, cool mix of Malcolm, Pac, and Lewis. This new rhyme be that rhyming noodles, minimum wage living. 21 to drink, but jail don't come with an age limit. Couldn't afford college, you could've got an A in it. Instead you on a jail bed, wishing you got away with it. Talk your way out of situations, words you got away with it. Not when they found the pounds of scale, you got away with it. And just to think you got stopped for an unpaid ticket. 2 years up top and not one paid visit. They won't complain, this is a snapshot of the streets. Cops leave brothers with they back shot in the streets. Red blood on black top and white sheets, more than deceased. Hennessy on concrete as we throw back shots in the streets. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music. No Democrat or Republican. More than busting windows out. No Jasmine Sullivan. It's that machete with sharp double edges, ready to start trouble. Up with a death wish. Up with breakfast like working a double. Studying the slave masters' ways and rituals. Can't leak your goals, even to those who say they liberals. Plotting to overthrow, gotta stay low, can't speak subliminals. We ain't get no heads up when it came to steal the minerals. As men, women, children suffer, wouldn't kill us, made us tougher. So we up after supper, coming after the infrastructure that kept us under, kept the culture held hostage. So like hostages held by a bounty hunter, we kept the hunger. Jail number, green jumper, or number 23 jumper. No more pick and cotton, we riding bumper to bump. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music. I can smell the smoke aroma. Black Wall Street burnt down in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Broken homes to Oakland, Homer. The Black Panthers, that same smoke aroma gave blacks cancer. Black Wall Street gave blacks hope. Felt like our last chance to be more than a singer, an actor, or black dancer. Black Panther began re-inspiring us. Then they shot a black man on camera to kill the fire in us. Firing us from your networks and record labels. Once admiring us, till we spoke truth instead of fables. So instead of cable, we hit the streets and the net with it. Yep. Equity and sweat with it, and yep, still get a check with it. Let us get it. We begging for Nathan, got our own label popping. No more picking cotton, we leaving it to rotten. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple.
It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel. It's that rotten cotton music out the rotten apple. It's that rotten cotton feel. Rotten cotton feel.
Abolition. Abolition. Abolition.
You just heard Old King Cotton, Sterling Brown, followed by Messiah Ramkissoon, Rotten Cotton. Peace and welcome to Abolition Today, a weekly syndicated online radio program with a specific focus on modern slavery as it is practiced through the 13th Amendment of the United States Constitution and by for-profit prisons worldwide. We air live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, and 4 Pacific. Live streams and archived podcasts are available at abolitiontoday.org. Abolition Today is also available on all major podcast platforms and is simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Yusuf Hassan. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Max Parthas. Peace, Max. What's going on, brother?
Peace, brother Yusuf. I'm here at the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center on this first day of Black August.
Yes, sir. Black August. So last week we showed how the U.S. is brazenly throwing accusations of crimes against humanity at other nations, slavery, forced labor, systemic oppression, and genocide. Like we did with the legal definition of slavery a few weeks ago, we examined the international definition of genocide and how it applied to descendants of the African diaspora today. We put the United States of genocide on full display. So make sure you check out that podcast from last week if you missed it. On this first day of Black August 2021, we look at how the cotton industry made kings in America. We'll keep you updated on the latest efforts in slavery abolitionist movement, and we'll discuss recent news as it relates to the struggle. Also, the Shut 'em Down 2021 has begun. This message comes from our sponsors at Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, and I Am We Ubuntu Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Coalition. Follow the link, iamweubuntu.com, and we'll discuss more of that during tonight's episode. And, of course, we've got music, poetry that will touch your soul and move your body, including bringing the voices of the ancestors back to life in our Bridging the Gap segment. So before we get down with all of that, Max, tell us about your week.
Oh, man. There's quite a bit going on, actually. Let me start out with saying peace to everybody who's tuned in today. Could have been anywhere, but you're here. I really appreciate that. We got some things to say. Last week, we took on a big job, and we killed it. We did what we do. Same thing we did when we gave the legal definition of slavery. We did that with genocide, and within a two-hour period, we really broke it down. Tomorrow night, I'm having, I don't know if it's an interview or a discussion with Sister Danny Cook, formerly of Tennessee. She has been doing a lot of confrontating racist rhetoric and actions and systems, and it's caused her to get a lot of death threats. And so she ended up having to leave Tennessee. So she wants to bring me in on her podcast tomorrow, and we'll talk. So I think it's going to be like 8 p.m. If she's in Tennessee, that would be 7 p.m. Tennessee time, 8 p.m. our time. I'm not sure where she moved to. I'll put it on my page, so make sure you follow me and Max Parthas, and you can tune in with myself and Danny Cook tomorrow. Also, I wanted to break down a little bit about Black August as well as the national shutdown demonstrations. The national shutdown demonstrations are organized by Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, one of our sponsors who helped us, who named our show and actually got us started here on Abolition Today. There's an article from Truth Out that explains it. It says in 2020, during just the first 2 months of the pandemic, incarcerated people collectively participated in at least 106 COVID-19 related rebellions in the United States. This year, organizers with Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, JLS, a national collective of imprisoned people fighting for human rights, are calling on non-incarcerated people to share the baton by holding national shut them down demonstrations on August 21st and September 9th. So, you know, it's always been between those two dates that they organized their events, like we did the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March. That was August 19th. And Black August represents quite a few things. So if you're able to organize in your city or state, make sure that you go ahead and put something together to help these brothers and sisters behind enemy walls get justice and freedom. So Black August is, let me read another one. This is from San Francisco Bayview, a little bit of that. It says that it was Jacoda Kotari's death that first inspired the concept of Black August among New Africans imprisoned in California. Initially, it commemorated the lives and deaths of George L. Jackson, who was murdered by California prison guards on August 21st, 1971. His brother Jonathan Jackson and James D. McClain and William Christmas, who died during an armed action to free Comrade George and others, staged at the Marin County Courthouse on August 7th, 1970. And W.L. Nolan, Alvin Sig Miller, and Cleveland Miller, who were assassinated by prison guards during a racial melee that was instigated by the pigs at Soledad State Prison on January 13, 1970. Since its early beginnings, Black August has grown to embrace many significant events and people in our history of struggles in America, especially those that have occurred during the month of August. You know, like, it's just, man, so much that has happened. August 1st was the day that they Britain ended slavery. Brother that got killed back in the 60s, and they had to open coffin. Emmett Till in August. Just so many things. It says, but for these struggles of peoples and their sacrifice, we would not have survived until today. Black August cannot be looked upon lightly. Black August is now observed each year by our people across the diaspora. Indeed, it is. I know I've been observing it now for at least the past decade and participated every year in something. We'll be doing so this year as well. Yusuf?
That's a lot of information you put out there, Max. a lot of stuff going on. We'll have all kinds of announcements for the entire month. You know, this week was a down week for me. I've just... a little under the weather, so I was on the mend for most of the week, you know, and, you know, I'm at about 80% right now, and I'm ready, you know, to kick off Black August and definitely get into this King Cotton that we have going on. You and I have talked about this for a little while.
Yeah, it's another one that I have produced over a year ago and just never had the opportunity to really sit it in because it's a little long. It's 13 minutes. And it talks about Cotton's relationship to the United States and the history of that. It's a very powerful, powerful clip. So tonight we're going to not only play it, but we're building a whole program around that. I'm looking forward to it as well. But that opening track from my brother, Messiah Ram Kassoum, as well as the poem, Old King Cotton, Thurling Brown, that was a very powerful way to begin this program, let people know where we're coming from. And I hope that by the end of the program also, we'll understand that it wasn't really cotton that made America rich. The cotton was a vehicle, you know, it was something else. And you'll see and hear about that throughout the evening. Yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm always thankful that we're in the position to disseminate the information that we give out because, you know, from day one, we've set out to clarify things. You know, there are a lot of misnomers and misinformation being put out or misdefinitions of things. And so one of them is being the role that cotton played in establishing the United States. And like you just said, it was a vehicle, but it wasn't the institution itself. You know, cotton, you know, because if that was the case, you know, it wouldn't still be continuing. But as we'll show throughout the show, that cotton, especially cotton plantations, are still very much alive within the prison system. So we know that there's some other system that has it in place and has it generating the type of money that it's generating, Max.
Man, let me give the people a little bit of history. The beginnings of America and the beginnings of the cotton trade and slavery all kind of coincide together. Let me explain how, right? The first declaration of intent to enslave human beings in the Americas as an industry happened in 1492. And this is a quote from Christopher Columbus's journal describing the Arawak tribal people living in the Bahamas. He said, they brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears, many other things, which they exchanged for glass beads and hawk's bells. They willingly traded everything they own. They do not bear arms and do not know them, for I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want. Christopher Columbus, 1492, in his diary. Cotton, slavery, and America. As a matter of fact, we have cotton on our money. Did you know
right.
that? Yeah.
Right.
We had cotton on our money. In North Carolina, the $5 bill and the $1, no, the $5 bill and the $4 bill both had images of slaves with their value. It was their image to the world saying, look, we are rich, biatch, and this is how we're rich. Because we own black people, and they are out here getting this cotton together for us. In the one image, there's a woman with maybe a two-year-old on her back, and she's holding her basket in her apron to pick cotton, and they seem oh so happy. Both of them are smiling, and all you can see is teeth and bright eyes.
And it's speaking of money, or U.S. currency, still to this day, 75% of U.S. currency is made of cotton. So cotton is still, you know, well within the U.S. economy, that the actual paper that's made is 75% cotton, 25% linen. So cotton still holds its place.
It definitely does. And there are prisons in America, like in Texas, Louisiana, where black men are picking cotton for free again. Picking cotton for free again. As a matter of fact, they got a story from Crone.com back in 2017 where they said that $500,000 of prison-grown cotton had to be destroyed, right?
Right.
Pop up in my head. They said $500,000 of prison. Go ahead.
I was going to say, because of, what was that, Hurricane Harvey?
Yes.
I believe, yeah, $500,000 worth of cotton was destroyed. The crops were destroyed because mm-hmm. of Hurricane Harvey.
On a Texas
half
prison.
$500,000 on a Texan prison.
Yeah, on a Texas prison, 300 acres of unharvested corn and miscellany and other vegetables included in that as well. But,
absolutely.
You know, that's
and
the type of money they're making on cotton over in Texas.
Absolutely. So there's an article from LitHub.com, L-I-T-H-U-B, and it's entitled The Straight Line from Slavery to Private Prisons. And they say, like prison systems throughout the South, Texas grew directly out of slavery. After the Civil War, the state's economy was in disarray, and cotton and sugar planters suddenly found themselves without hands they could force to work. Fortunately for them, the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, left a loophole. It said that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States except as punishment for. As long as black men were convicted of crimes, Texas could lease all of its prisoners to private cotton and sugar plantations and companies running lumber camps and coal mines and building railroads. It did this for 5 decades after the abolition of slavery, but the state eventually became jealous of the revenue private companies and planters were earning from its prisons. So between 1899 and 1918, the state, talking about Texas, bought 10 plantations of its own and began running them as prisons.
Began running the plantations as prisons.
Mm-hmm.
In Texas. Y'all don't see the connection? Like 2021 right now, $500,000 in cotton that just got lost because of Hurricane Harvey. What the hell are they doing with $500,000 of cotton in prison?
Right. That is a lot of cotton. You know, because I have to look and see how much cotton goes for by the pound.
Right. In Louisiana, they're doing it at 4 cents an hour. out there picking cotton in the hot sun in a prison that was formerly a plantation. It is so damn big that it is a metropolis of its own, the size of the Isle of Manhattan.
Right.
It's amazing that how can something that big and in your face not be seen? Like, you know, nobody knows what's going on, apparently.
So anyway, according to reports,
go ahead.
According to reports, as of 2018, cotton went from anywhere from $87 to $95 per pound.
Well, King Cotton, and we still got prisons that are growing it with slaves, people who are under the 13th Amendment are property of the state now. Picking cotton for either free or 4 cents an hour. It's the same thing, 4 cents an hour, 3 cents an hour. That's not
right.
Any kind of a salary that you should be talking about. And they take whatever little bit they give them anyway right back out of it or overcharge them on things. Like in Angola, they were saying that the prisoners keep only half their money they make. The other half is placed in an account for prisoners to use to set themselves up after their release. However, due to some of the harshest sentencing practices in the country, 97% of Angola prisoners will never be released. And so most will never get the other half. Think about that. They're giving them 4 cents an hour and robbing them for that. Promise them 3% of y'all are going to get half of this 4 cents an hour when you get out after 50 years. But the other half, we're just going to promise it to you and keep it. And they say that 1 in 5, basically, of the prisoners in Louisiana are picking cotton. And we're talking about the same state that just voted to keep slavery legal, the same state that just showed through the Supreme Court that they were practicing Jim Crow laws of 10 and 2, Jim Crow laws, which were unconstitutional, and the same damn state that refuses to make freeing people, or at least having them get a new trial, the people, 1,500 people who were stuck behind that, refused to give it to them by making the unconstitutionality retroactive. So apparently the Supreme Court decided, you know, this was unconstitutional today. It began today. The day we said it's unconstitutional,
right.
That's when it began. That's crazy,
and,
man.
And when we talk about Louisiana, you know, I was reading just some of the harsh sentences that they give there. For instance, writing bad checks can earn you up to 10 years in jail. A two-time car burglar can get 24 years without parole. A trio of drug convictions will get someone a life sentence, all of which time prisoners can be forced to work in conditions that mirror those supposedly outlawed 150 years ago. This is according to an article, Dolucera at .com. So, you know, we hear writing bad checks. You know, a person usually in most states gets probation or they'll get some minimum sentence, you know, 3 years, 5 years. Not that I'm downplaying that. I mean, one day in jail is far too much for most offenses because, you know, you lose your civility, you lose your humanity. But I'm in no way saying that, you know, 3 to 5 years is something small. But it's just showing the difference. You can get 10 years for that. Or stealing a car, you know, New Jersey drive. Max, you're from New Jersey, and, you know, New Jersey put, car theft on the map, you know, in the movies. Well, something simply like that, just having a joyride, will get you 24 years without parole in Louisiana, and it will send you off to a plantation to pick cotton or tobacco or sugar, all of these things, with no end in sight.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's so much to talk about with this, but I think that we should go ahead and get into the star of the show for tonight. The brother that is going to, you're going to hear now is Attorney Jeffrey Robinson. He's involved in quite a few criminal justice reform, and he discusses these issues on a regular basis. I can't say I agree with everything that he's talking about, not necessarily in
right.
this clip, but in my research of him. But he knows what he's talking about here, for sure. And we're going to share it with you today. So this is the Max Mix, King Cotton Mix, with attorney Jeffrey Robinson. You're listening to Abolition Today with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan, abolitiontoday.org. We'll be right back after this.
Abolition.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton. And my point is that from Plymouth Rock, white supremacy was the basis of how this country was formed. It doesn't mean that we're not a great country. It doesn't mean that we currently are all bigots. It means this is the truth about how our country was formed, and we can either deal with it realistically and as the truth, or we can keep trying to deny it. And in terms of keep trying to deny the nature of our true history, I feel like just saying, how's that working out for us? I'm now going to show you, in the words of the people who built the country, how important white supremacy was.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
Important as the soul is to the body, and without it, no house can gain a proper stability. And you're like, Jeff, that's 1784, a long time ago.
What these people have forgotten,
bear with me,
is the story of King Cotton.
40 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence owned other human beings. The founding fathers of America had absolutely, positively no problem with white supremacy. They believed in it. It was the truth. It was the reality of their time. And they weren't embarrassed to say it.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
One of the main reasons that Native Americans were driven off their ancestral land. The plantation owners had to have room. If you're going to grow cotton and tobacco, you need a lot of land.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
13% of the entire American population was enslaved by 1860. Can I see a show of hands? How many people understood that slavery was that pervasive? And maybe some, and that's good, but you know what? I guarantee if you knew that, you didn't learn it in high school, and you didn't learn it in college. You learned that somewhere else. This is not taught to us. To understand the economic dependency on slavery. And so when I talk about the monuments and the Civil War and the things that are behind this, one of the other things I would just encourage you to do, like any other investigation that you would do, follow the money to understand what the motivation is. Just follow the money. The Indian Removal Act of 1830 took 100,000 adults and sent them on our version of the Long March. And you see how many of them died on that march. What this did to the Choctaw Indians in the Southeast was horrendous. And here's why they did it. Because they needed room for this.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
People may think, well, I have an understanding that slavery was somehow directly tied to cotton production, and cotton production was kind of important. I want to ask you to think about that in some different terms. And before we do that, let's talk about Andrew Jackson, who was the architect of the Indian Removal Act. And our president, once again, we talk about rewriting history. You can't diss Andrew Jackson. He's on the $20 bill. And if he's on the $20 bill and he's a horrible, horrible person, what does that mean? Does that mean we have to take him off the $20 bill? Does that mean we have to start thinking about why we put him there in the first place? I don't want to deal with that. He's a great president. Well, these are the facts about Andrew Jackson that I'd ask you to consider.
What these people have forgotten. The story of King Cotton.
But here's what our President of the United States has said about Andrew Jackson. And I'm going to read this. Had Andrew Jackson been a little bit later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart. And he was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this. The problem with it is, the first problem,
these people have forgotten the story of King Cotton.
That Andrew Jackson was dead 16 years before the Civil War started. And I know it is. It's like, are you kidding me? But it's like as funny as a heart attack. Because there are people who believe this. And this is part, you're saying like, oh, it's ridiculous, nobody believes that. We are in 2017 and we're having a debate about what the Civil War meant. If you think that who controls the past is not important, you are wrong. Think about the arguments that we're having in this country today. And it's because the past has been concealed.
These people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
This is one of the most amazing books you will ever see, written in 1839, Slavery as It Is. And the only thing these people did was to go to newspapers, cut out articles about slavery, and put them in a book. That's why they called it Slavery as It Is. And so I want to show you the real Andrew Jackson, because he had a slave that ran away. And he wasn't having that. So he put an ad in the newspaper, Stop the Runaway, and he offered a $50 reward. That's not what I want to talk to you about. It's the end of this newspaper advertisement put in by Andrew Jackson near Nashville, state of Tennessee. And this is what it says. If you find that slave, $10 extra for every 100 lashes any person will give him to the amount of 300.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
When people say folks didn't fight the Civil War about slavery, they weren't about defending slavery. This is years before the Civil War. Is slavery as it is. Everyone knew that this is what slavery was about. There weren't any questions about it.
These people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
So, Texas school officials are saying we want our children to learn that slavery was a side issue to the Civil War because it's divisive. We have to look forward. And President Trump is saying we need to love each other now and whatever. But we need to love each other, and we have to look forward, not backward. And I get that. Looking forward is important. But if you are looking forward from a place that is false, then where you're looking forward to is the road to hell. We can't go forward without acknowledging where we have been. What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton. And that's something that I will never forget. I didn't have to learn this in the past 6 years. I had to learn the true meaning, but I didn't have to learn the term, because King Cotton was part of my upbringing in Memphis, Tennessee. King Cotton was a food brand. King Cotton was on everything. There was actually a Hotel King Cotton in Memphis. Army and Navy Club, completely air-conditioned. Bed and halls, sprinkler-protected. Three-channel radio and Muzak, and overlooking the Mississippi River. This was one of the luxury hotels in Memphis. But what does the phrase King Cotton mean? What it meant to me was bacon. Because King Cotton bacon, King Cotton sausage, King Cotton, like, rolls. This was like the food of my childhood. Everybody in Memphis bought King Cotton brand. And when I finally found out what the name actually stood for, I felt like I wanted to throw up. Because King Cotton, the theory that was used by Southerners before the Civil War to say, we can do this. We can break away from the North and it's economically feasible. And here's why. Everybody depends on our cotton. We can shut down the mills in the North in a heartbeat. Britain and France are going to have to make a decision. Will they support us militarily? Because we can cut down their mills. We just won't send them our cotton. It couldn't have been more practically and beautifully stated than it was by Senator Henry Hammond of South Carolina. Without firing a gun, without drawing a sword, should they make war on us, we could bring the whole world to our feet. What would happen if no cotton was furnished for 3 years? England would topple headlong and carry the whole civilized world with her, save the South. No, you dare not make war on cotton. No power on earth dares to make war upon it, because cotton is king. Follow the money. This is how important cotton was.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
What kind of money are we talking about? 1840, cotton made 59% of all U.S. exports. This is 15 years before the Civil War. 1.5 million pounds with about 700,000 slaves, and you can see how that changed. 2.25 billion pounds and almost 4 million slaves. This is what made America wealthy. This was the formation of wealth. And folks, I just want to make sure as a side note to say, I hope you don't think that the money made from slavery just dissolved and went up into the air. It went into companies and businesses, and not even tracing and blaming those corporations. Those corporations hired people and paid their salaries and their benefits and gave them the ability to raise families and to pass wealth on through the generations. This money is what made America financially stable.
What these people have forgotten is the story of King Cotton.
The market value of slaves in 1860 was greater than the market value of every railroad, factory, and bank combined. Follow the money, because the money we're talking about was huge.
Huge.
King Cotton mix. That was attorney Jeffrey Robinson out of Memphis, Tennessee, who is the executive director of the Who We Are Project. And until April 2021, he was also the deputy legal director and the director of the ACLU Trone Center for Justice and Equality. Welcome back to Abolition Today with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan. Max, man, oh man, oh man, it was just so much that Jeffrey broke down for us in that talk right there.
The talk itself is an hour and 41 minutes, and I just clipped out 13 minutes worth that I thought would be very, very impactful. And it was, indeed it was. But the whole thing is definitely a must-see, and you can get that at Abolition Today on our Facebook page. It's called A Must-Watch Entirely, The Truth About the Confederacy in the United States. And it's from 2017. So he's really addressing like critical race theory back in 2017, before everybody got their panties in a bunch when we started telling the truth about America.
Right. Right. Wow. Yeah, I need to go listen and watch that entire thing. You know, when I first saw that the track was 12 minutes long, I was like, I don't know. What are the listeners going to think of such a long track? But as I'm listening to it, the 12 minutes was up. It seemed like it had only been 3 minutes. I was like, man, it's over already? So I definitely need to go hear the rest of it, because that was powerful.
I took quite a bit of notes. It's like my third time hearing it, third or fourth time. So many things stood out. I don't even know if I can go over it all. You know, the story about Andrew Jackson alone was worth the price of admission. This bastard put a $50 reward out for his escaped enslaved person, a person he enslaved personally, the president, and then put at the end an ad that he would give anybody willing to do it an extra $10 per 100 lashes for up to 300 lashes. Imagine some racist, white supremacist, KKK, slave-owning bastard, fugitive slave hunter catching you and giving you 300 lashes. I don't know if you've seen that film, The Underground Railroad, but in episode one, there's a brother that happened to, and that's how you would look. Like, you might as well not even be alive if you lived through it anymore, because it's ripped you to shreds.
Right.
So that was the you know, Andrew Jackson and the lies they was telling about him and stuff like that, and how, you know, they're trying to conceal the past. And I got to get that book, Slavery as It Is. Or if you're one of my listeners and you want to make a donation to the Paul Cuffee
right.
Abolitionist Center, pick up the book, Slavery as It Is, one for yourself maybe and one for us, and send us the copy so that we'll have it here at the center. And see what else he was talking about in there. There's, like, so much, like I said. At one point he said that cotton was so powerful that no gun and no sword could stand against it, that it could bring the whole world to its knees. And what he meant by that is that the Industrial Revolution was going on the back of cotton. Cotton was going in the north here in the United States, New York, and places like that. They had these industrial mills where immigrants would come in and start a new life, right? And they'd work in these
right.
mills, fabric mills. And guess where the cotton was coming from? From the South. And it was building up this huge Industrial Revolution, not only in America, but also in Europe. And if they stopped giving you that cotton, when 60% of the imports were cotton, it would bring the world to its knees. But that's the question that I think needs to be answered. What was the real value? Was it the cotton people that were enslaved? Because he said at one point that the market value of the enslaved Africans in America was worth more than the banks, the railroads, and the factories combined. So it seems to me that the cotton was just the vehicle, but it was the slavery that made it all possible, especially after 1789 and the cotton gin was created. That was it right there. Because before that, it would take you like all day to do a tenth of what the cotton gin could do. And then after that, it created the demand for slaves. They went from 700,000 in 1789 enslaved Africans and natives all the way up to 4 million in 1865. Yusuf?
Well, you touched on it on almost everything that I was going to say, so that at least shows that we definitely wanted to bring home the same thing. Yes, cotton was the king, but slavery made it possible. That's what
yes.
it boils down to. Because without the institution of slavery, you know, had there not been the loophole, as we've presented in the articles before, if there was no loophole there, then many or all of those plantations would have shut down because they would have had no labor. They would have had no laborers. So that just goes to show that slavery rescue these industries. When we start talking about cotton, sugar, tobacco, railroads, so these companies wouldn't have been able to have these huge bankrolls from all the money they save from not having to pay their laborers. So yes, cotton's king. Slavery was the institution that allowed it to be king.
Right. Because it could have been anything. It could have been tobacco. It could have been marijuana. But without that slavery, it would have been worthless, is how the Industrial Revolution really got its boom, through slavery. And you heard earlier in the other clips, where they were talking about how these prisons that they were building were built on plantations, cotton plantations, huge tracts of land turned into prisons. And the reasoning for that is because after Reconstruction with the pig laws and black codes, that was how they turned a loss into a win. They may have lost the war, but the states were allowed to continue using slavery through their prison systems. And this way that they were doing it with the convict lease system, for them was far more streamlined, but for us it was far more cruel. That's why the book's called Worse Than Slavery, because in convict leasing, if you died working in these fields, you were just seen as a criminal who was worked to death and you got what you deserved, and they would simply go out and get another person to replace you or however many they needed. They would work you to death, literally, and they had no concern for your human rights at all. So whatever went down in slavery was even worse under convict leasing, because now they felt justified because you had been convicted of a crime. There's an article from the Innocence Project that talks about like Parchman Farm out in Mississippi and others. And in it, they say that in Mississippi, Texas, and other states, legislators passed pig laws, which labeled the stealing of a farm animal or any property valued at more than $10 grand larceny. It's kind of reflective of what you were just saying earlier on, right? And it was punishable by 5 years in prison. 5 years. Such laws were enforced almost exclusively against black people, reinforcing the man-made association between blackness and criminality. A single instance of punishment of whites under these acts has never occurred, declared a Tennessee Black Convention, and is not expected. While the 13th Amendment abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, it carved out a loophole that allowed for the exploitation of incarcerated people who were then and now disproportionately black. The amendment abolished slavery and involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime where the party shall have been duly convicted. And prisoners, men, women, and hundreds of children as young as 6 or 7 were then leased to private farmers and business owners who previously depended on cheap labor supplies by slaves. By 1880, at least one convict in four was an adolescent or a child. 1 in 4 was an adolescent or a child, a percentage that did not diminish over time, according to Oshinsky. States profited substantially from the Black Codes prisoner leasing system. The number of state prisoners in Mississippi rose from 272 in 1874, the year the pig law was passed, to 1,072 by 1877. Mm-hmm. You see how this thing has grown and what it was meant to do? And this is why we have the Abolition Amendment today. You see?
You know, as we're going through this, I'm thinking about the hypocrisy, because we know just as the U.S. Put out all kinds of reports about things that were going on in China and other countries as it relates to genocide, here we have another instance of U.S. hypocrisy, because we know that there's an article that came out by Fortune.com. It says, brands abandon Chinese cotton amid alleged forced labor. Early at last year, amid mounting reports of forced labor and human rights abuses in China's Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region, XUAR for abbreviation, U.S. outdoor apparel maker Patagonia resolved to stop sourcing cotton from China. From April 2020 on, the brand's global suppliers had to vet and eliminate any links to the world's largest cotton producer. The decision wasn't easy. China accounts for roughly 20% of global cotton supply, and Xinjiang produces some of the highest grade cotton in the world. Some of the other retailers who were pulling away from these Chinese cotton manufacturers are L.L. Bean, Victoria's Secret. Hey, how hypocritical is that? We know that it wasn't until maybe 2 years ago that Victoria's Secret stopped using prison labor to build their products. You know, so they're talking about they're pulling out from these Chinese cotton manufacturers, as well as women's wear maker Reformation and many other U.S. companies. But what they're not saying is that many of these companies still do business with U.S. prisons to have their apparel and their products made within the prisons. So this is why we say it's very hypocritical, because they'll speak out against other countries, but they won't speak out against the prisons for the same atrocities that are happening in other countries that are happening right here, right within the United States.
Yeah, it's incredibly hypocritical. It sounds a lot like those founding fuckery fathers. Don't it? You know?
It sounds just like them.
Molesting somebody's child, not only somebody's child, your niece. You're molesting your adolescent niece, 14 years old. At the same time, you're declaring all men created equal.
Right.
You're calling her your property. Your niece is your property. You own her, and you're actually the father of capitalism in the United States, because you're the first one to talk about how women were more valuable than men because they provided more capital by being able to give birth. And that was Thomas Jefferson. So it sounds just a lot like these fake fathers that they keep claiming as the greatest men on earth, who at the same time pedophiles and slavers and criminals of the highest order, who, if we're alive now, many people would want to see them lined up and shot. I'm just saying, you know, which is why we here in 2021 have to have all of these states remove the exception clause for slavery, because apparently it was a thing where 24 states had exception clauses to slavery. In addition to that, Puerto Rico's got it and Washington, D.C. And they didn't get it all at the same time, so it kind of proves our point that they put that exception clause in there to be able to exploit prison labor and now warehousing bodies for profit. So as of now, at this date, we've got 4 states where slavery's been abolished. Yay for us. The Abolish Slavery National Network. We've got 8 that are scheduled to have theirs removed by 2022. 2 are already on the ballot, which is Oregon and Tennessee. And yesterday we brought Maine into the mix. So Maine's about to follow suit and get on board too. We'll have 38 states involved in this abolition movement by the time we get to the November elections. That's the goal. And in addition to that, we got SJ Resolution 21, which is the resolution to end slavery on a federal level, and SJ Resolution 53 from the House, which is the joint resolution to do the same thing. Like, this has never happened before. This is so big and monumental and epic, it's surprising that it only took a few people across the country to make this happen. Yusuf?
Yeah, and we've reached critical mass now.
Critical mass.
It started
right
with just
now.
A few.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's funny, as you were talking about, you know, the states having exception clauses, think of all the states that joined the Union after the 13th Amendment was ratified. So that means that they came in at a time when slavery allegedly had been abolished, but they walked in the door and added the clause along with exceptions.
Yeah, some did before the 13th Amendment, like Alabama and Ohio had this, and Vermont. They all had this before the 13th Amendment. Remember, there were 7 iterations prior to the 8th. So 7
right.
times they tried to put the same type of thing through and successfully had done so. And then the states started adding them afterwards. The ones that didn't already have it, they started adding theirs afterwards once they saw what the South was doing and how it was benefiting
right.
the North because of what the South.
Absolutely. And we know some of the largest prison manufacturing companies, you know, in northern, I mean, if we just talk about Corecraft in New York State, where during the pandemic we saw how much hand sanitizer and gloves and other products were being made through Corecraft, which is inside New York State, which is supposedly a quote-unquote free state, a northern state, but yet they're heavily benefiting from the exception clause of the 13th Amendment.
There's this, you know, I had to watch a lot of old black and white videos in my research for this topic here today, and one of them that I watched was called King Cotton. and it talks about specifically the Jewish community in the North and how they prospered because of the cotton industry working within the facilities, you know, with the factories and the processing plants and things like that. And it shows how mm-hmm. as immigrants they came and made their mark and established themselves and got generational wealth. But look where it came from, because we've established already it really wasn't the cotton. It could have been any damn thing. It was the slavery that was making things happen. So the cotton was the grease for the machine, but the slavery was providing the entire network. So do they owe anything for that generational wealth that they gained through slavery? Like, everybody was gaining except those who were enslaved and the free black population. It's terrible. And even today, they talk about how there's nobody alive who owns slaves, and they don't own nothing. They don't own nothing for what somebody else did, or the great-grandfathers and stuff like that. But they don't realize they're benefiting from that stuff right now. As I keep saying, if you own prison stock or jail bonds, you are a slaver. If you're a policeman, you're a slave catcher. No exceptions. You're a slave catcher. You only need to catch one. We've determined that too, right? That you only need to catch one slave to be a slave catcher.
You only need
catcher.
To catch one.
So, you know,
the average person with a full – I'm sorry, Max.
Go ahead. That's it. Keep saying.
I was going to say the average person with the 401k plan, you know, you work a job and you're getting a 401k or 403b, you own prison stock against your knowledge, because many people don't even look into where TD America or Fidelity, Charles Schwab, these companies that manage companies' portfolios, they don't really look and see what they're investing in. So you may think, okay, they're investing in, say, for instance, BAE Systems or something, you know, that's manufacturing anything in technology, but they're not looking to see. Well, guess what? BAE Systems also uses prison labor. So you're involved in it without even knowing. So this is why I've always encouraged people, look, you have to go inside your portfolio and see who these companies are, what their products are, what are they putting out there. You know, you have many companies where, you know, it was always the one thing, you take Mattel, the toy manufacturer, and, you know, for years they manufactured the M16. You know, and people didn't know that, and it wasn't until people started learning of it that they separated from their arms manufacturing from their toy company. So a company may be well known for one particular product, but it's the other things that the companies do that you may not know. And that's why I say many people are investing in slavery against their knowledge. So you have to go inside and look to see where your money's going, because – otherwise, you are a willing participant in slavery.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Victoria's Secret earlier, because, you know, a lot of these major fashion designers now are under scrutiny because they're using, you know, labor from third world countries or cotton that's coming from China and things like that. And Victoria's Secret was one of the ones that decided they're not going to use cotton is coming from China because it has these questionable origins. But Victoria's Secret was employing women right here in South Carolina inside the prisons to sew their underwear at 28 cents an hour. And that was perfectly fine for them, huh? You know, that was perfectly fine. Listen, I want to get into our music break. Think that's a good idea?
Absolutely.
All right. Let's get into the music break. I want to give people a little description of it beforehand. First, we've been dealing with some issues for some years here, and it's expressed through this mix. What I'm talking about is these cotton camps for children, where they've been taking children out to cotton fields, black children in particular, having to pick cotton and sing slavery songs. And this starts out with a brother who's a grown man now, in his 20s, and he's telling his story of when he was in the fifth grade, and they sent him to one of these cotton camps. And then it's going to be followed by Brother Tupac featuring Eminem called Black Cotton. And you'll also hear from a mother recently whose third grader had to go through that same damn thing. So, you know how we do it, Abolition Today. We be killing it with the music. And everything's a song and a poem. All right? So you're listening to Abolition Today with Max Parsons and Yusuf Hassan. AbolitionToday.org. We'll be right back after this.
Abolition. Today.
The racist field trip I have ever been on in my fucking life. They took us to a fucking cotton processing place. And there was a big ass cotton field out in the middle of fucking Raymond, Alabama in the south of Montgomery County. We went there and me and 28 other little nigglets in Miss Harper's third grade classroom, they took our asses out there in the middle of the fucking August heat and said, hey, y'all, they gave us bags and shit. Like little cute little plastic bags. With a cotton puff person with a smile on his face, and they're like, "Hey, y'all go out there, have fun, pick as much cotton as you want." And so my stupid ass went, I went. My mama signed off on it and didn't think about it. And I went to the fucking field trip. Out there in the field just having a good old time. We were singing songs and shit in the middle of the motherfucking field, picking goddamn cotton in the middle of the fucking heat. And then, I'm thinking, because it's a field trip, they told us you can pick as much as you want. Hey, you get to keep the fucking cotton. You can keep it. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep it. And we go to get back on the bus. They're like, all right, kids, turn your bags in. And they take our asses inside and took all the damn cotton that we had. And then told us to get back on the fucking bus. So me being a little rebel, I took a handful of cotton, stuffed it in my pocket, and went home. Then my mama came when she was doing laundry the next night. She was like, what the fuck? Is this cotton in your back pocket? I was like, yeah. Where the hell did you get unprocessed raw cotton from? Well, yesterday on that field trip, they took us to a cotton processing plant, and we got to pick cotton all day long. My mama came to the school, and I swear to God, that shit went down. She locked this woman in a room like, how dare you jive-ass motherfuckers take my kids and all these other ashy little Negroes to a fucking cotton field in the middle of the summer. You fucking soulless bitch. She fucking checked me out of school. I didn't go to school for 3 days buying that shit. She said, I don't want to have to look at that bitch. She was pissed at everybody. Yeah, that was the most racist shit I've ever gone through in my life. I didn't even understand what was wrong until the next year. I didn't even understand. I just thought we were just going to go have some fun in the field. So fuck that shit. That was fucking shit cropping if I ever seen it. Fuck that shit.
Rotten black cotton,
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 Uh-huh. Running out of luck, about to self-destruct.
Uh-huh.
Old head said, live your life like such. You sure to catch it with your one day boy.
I wouldn't listen to him.
The power movement was cool, but it ain't fixed nothing. So I just go with what I know.
I don't trust nothing.
Look what the 80s did
to us baby kids.
And now we grown up.
Nobody ain't grown up
like me. I'm plotting on what they owe me. I'm working without a profit. Tackling all my homies, I'm hurting, but keep it mobbing and jerking, and we ain't stopping. Curtains, you try to rise, but certainly we survivors, outlaw riders. What's the reward for a struggler? If the Lord loving us, then why they hate to see us coming up, running up, gun cocked, black mask and gloves. If you ain't got it, pity mine and blood. No love, waiting for my 40 acres in a blunt to blaze. Biblical time, good hearts with militant minds, but black cotton. I'm hopping over enemy lines for black cotton. I ain't stopping till they giving me mine. Black
cotton in a field.
I'm livid right now.
In the middle of Black History Month.
I'm African American and my ancestors pick cotton. Why would I want my son to pick cotton and think it's fun?
Abolition. Abolition today.
Welcome back to Abolition Today with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan. That was the Cotton Picker Sing Songs. The music was by The Funky Destination, The Last Cotton Field Song, and that was followed up by Tupac featuring Eminem, Black Cotton. Wow, Max. You know, just hearing that, you know, I think of just the weird things I went through in school, and I'm sure you have some similar stories, you know. But that's got to be the wildest one I've ever heard. You know, taking children, I'm laughing, but it's definitely not funny. You know, but I'm just thinking of the excitement of children because they don't know any better. So you're going out to a field and you telling them, yeah, pick as much cotton as you want. You know, I'm hearing the guy tell the story and, you know, and of course they all probably were competing with each other to
and
see who could pick the most cotton.
The people.
Yeah, and then when they go to get on the bus, they're like, no, you can't take that with you. And I'm glad, you know, he had the wherewithal to stash some in his pocket, which that would have definitely been me. You know, first of all, I would have been, you know, I would have given some pushback and I would have been in all kinds of trouble coming back to begin with. Just the mere fact of cotton, because I was taught about that at a young age. But, you know, yeah, I definitely would have brought some back. You know, to say, look, they made us pick cotton, man. And I just can't imagine that. We're talking, you know, third grade, so we're talking 8-year-olds. And during the summer.
The happy slave rhetoric, you know. Oh, we're
right
out here singing and picking cotton and enjoying ourselves. And pick as much cotton as we want. It's a beautiful thing. You're going to have a wonderful experience and go home remembering how picking cotton was great. You know, like really, like
right.
It's the happy slave psychosis that they keep trying to put on us. Like you were saying about Andrew Jackson, you know what I mean? Like we were happy. We were fine with slavery. Everything was great. And they were giving us ahead and bringing us into civilization and making us civilized, because, you know, we were savages. Remember, even in Constitution says the Indian savages, and we were the savages too. So this is indoctrinating children.
And just as we heard, what's the gentleman's name? I can't recall his name offhand, but he just said a few weeks ago of how slavery was like the great thing for us. You know what I'm talking about, the neurosurgeon, who's the head of housing right now. I can't recall his name offhand.
Yeah, the brain surgeon.
Yeah,
I'm the same way right now. I can't remember his damn name, but you know what I mean?
What?
That's good, because we should. He don't need to have his name remembered, because the things that he can say makes Kanye West look tame. Like saying how the family structure was better during slavery. Like, fool, what the hell is wrong with you? Ben Carson. They were selling our children. They were putting our children into prisons. They were selling our wives and raping our little girls. And you talking about how the family structure was more, was stronger during slavery. This damn fool, you know, I just can't take them. I can't take these damn fools. Listen, if you want to join this conversation, feel free to call us at 515-605-9814, 515-605-9814. We got time for a couple calls. If you do call in, remember to press the number 1 on your keypad. So we know you have a question or comment, because people sometimes call in just to listen. So, yeah, I had to say that to get that rant away, because it was another rant on its way, man.
Hey, ran on, brother, ran on, man.
You know, Tupac was talking about
the absurdity of that. Yeah.
He said that is a symbol for unrewarded struggle. And, you know, the example of that would be, as we were talking about here in the South, the demand for people to be enslaved even after the transatlantic slave trade had ended in Britain, because remember, this is the anniversary of it this month, of the of the breeding people to get more slaves. Sometimes they would do the breeding themselves and then enslave their own children, their own nieces and sons and daughters and nephews. They would do that, the sick son of bitches. So, you know, it was for them, they were making all these rewards. The same thing for the immigrants. Like I mentioned, the Jewish community who came in and worked within the textile plants and made their fortunes like that. And others that were doing the same thing. But that none of that would have existed had it not been for enslaved black people. Like, that was the whole engine driving it all right there. And what did they get for it? 40 acres and a mule? Nope. Did they get an apology? Nope. Did they get freedom? At the very least, did they get freedom? Nope. They got conditional freedom, temporary freedom, periodic freedom, and not really freedom at all, because there is no steps to freedom. You either have it or you don't. So what did they get? Nothing. Unrewarded struggle. Black cotton. As soon as we got it, they took it or burned it or destroyed it or blew it up.
Right. Right, it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back, or 1 step forward, 2 steps back. You know, and
redlined
that's usually the case. Right, exactly. You know, and it continues the day through not just the prison systems, but I mean just the whole economic structure, the educational system. You know, they restrict what information that comes in. You know, the schools get books that are 10 and 15 and 20 years old, and it's full of lies and information within the books. So it's hard breaking that cipher because of the narratives that are out there. I mean, we're still, here it is, 150, almost 152 years later, that we're still trying to bring clarity that slavery hasn't ended.
Yeah.
So, and then we look at all of the other things that we say that we haven't even gotten to yet, because many don't even realize that it all ties into going back to the topic of slavery. I mean, if you just even talk about redlining, or you talk about the discrimination in loans. I mean, you name the topic.
Disenfranchisement.
Yeah, it's all going to tie back to the same root cause. Everything branches off from there. And just like with the branches of a tree, sometimes when you see the branches, you can't even tell that they belong to the same tree. And that's the same thing that happens with slavery. There are things that happen to this day that people don't see that the root cause is slavery until it's shown to them. You say, well, look, follow this stem right here, follow that stem, then you see it attached to that branch, and guess what? It goes right back to this trunk right here. So it just has to be shown to them.
You know, so I sometimes share my own personal history on the program, and I've mentioned Paterson, New Jersey before, and I, in hindsight, have been able to realize what was happening then, but I was so sure at the time. I was a young man, but I saw these things occur with my own eyes as they took jobs out of our community, and then we lost our homes, and the homes were taken over and sold on the low to immigrants, Hispanic
mm-hmm.
communities. I watched the black communities disappear. I watched our people be displaced. My own family members be displaced. And then I saw them usher them into what they called the Alabama Projects, which are basically sardine cans for human beings to live in, and some of the most terrible places in the nation. It was so bad that the Alabama Project, at the time that my family had been forced to live in these concentration camps, they had the highest AIDS infection rate in America. And that's what we were living in. The drugs, the crack, the crime, it was all rampant. And at the same time, the for-profit prison industry was invading that city with the jail that they had just built at that period in the early 90s. And so while the people were being destroyed and turned into a criminal mind state, they were farming them and taking them out just like they would do back with the black codes and the pig laws and putting them in these prisons. And then they wonder why Paterson is one of those places where people are murdered every day. And they wonder
right.
why it's like that. Look what you create. You create these things. It wasn't cotton that was your prime value for the country. It wasn't cotton that was the product. It was human lives that you were destroying all the way up till present day in order to make your money on it. These states and these cities and counties would not be able to exist without their prisons, without their jails, and their fines and their fees that they use for extortion and the school of prison pipeline to send select communities continuously in and out of these prisons. Like, it generates revenue, and it's used as an economic development program. I think that's a good lead-in for the next one, too. What do you think?
Absolutely. You know, I was just going to say as a caveat to that, and it's also part of the history of Paterson, Paterson was a very industrious region.
Industrial.
You know, they had
yep.
kinds of silk factories. That's why it's referred to as Silk City. Silk and dye were like the biggest industries there. And they also had mental institutions out in Paterson. And what happened, I believe it was in the late 70s or sometime in the 80s when they closed many of those factories and they closed the mental institutions and the people were just basically put out onto the streets to fend for themselves. And then you end up having a generation being born where there was no real mental health in a community and no jobs.
And so what do you think
is going to happen? Yeah, no care, no jobs, the finances, any money that did come into the city, it was taken by, you know, many corrupt politicians like Torres, and I forgot the person before
Marty Barnes.
Marty Barnes. They were, all of these guys were out there taking the money that was supposed to be providing jobs and providing the mental health and all of the other needs of the city. And so now you can see why Patterson is the way it is. You can see why Baltimore is the way it is. You can see why Chicago is the way it is. It is the
Detroit,
as Hillary Clinton would say it, the unintended consequences. But we know they were intended, because when they make moves 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead of time. So already they already knew what was going to happen. And so now Patterson is one of the main feeders into the New Jersey prison system. So they knew what they were doing.
This is why I have issues with free trade as we have it right now, because there are nations out there whose their dollar is not anywhere equal to our dollar. And so they are paying people, like in Nigeria, 70 cents an hour or 30 cents an hour. And so our companies here in the United States will go to nations like that in order to get this cheap slave labor. It's always after the slave labor, right? And when they leave, the vacuum they leave behind of those jobs that people fought so hard to get in this country and in their communities are just taken out suddenly with nothing to replace it at all. And what do you think is going to happen to them then? You know, I don't know how many people out there have watched generations lose everything in these types of instances, but I've seen it with my own eyes and felt it with my own heart. You know, it's not cotton, man. What we export is niggas. And that's the next mix. The nigga export company. And you'll understand what I mean by what you hear. You're listening to Abolition Today. We'll be right back after this.
Abolition. Abolition. Today.
Already, while the war was still being fought, anti-slavery society sprung up. But the issue was not simple. In 1789, a machine called the cotton gin had been invented.
The one crop was cotton. Cotton was such an important part of the plantation system that it came to be called King Cotton. The enormous amount of hand labor required to grow and pick the cotton was supplied by great numbers of slaves. This, then, was the economic background of the plantation. Cheap slave labor producing one main crop on vast tracts of land owned by the planter.
Let me tell you something. There is no nobility in poverty. I have been a rich man and I have been a poor man, and I choose rich every fucking time. Because at least as a rich man, when I have to face my problems, I show up in the back of a limo wearing a $2,000 suit and a $40,000 gold fucking watch.
Our way of life is very precious to me. I will do whatever is required to maintain it.
I feel the way most of you running your properties is shaking the graciousness out of our civilization. Mr. McKay wears out his darkies in 4 to 5 years. Mine live out their entire lifetime.
Then why do you have more runaways than all of us put together?
We better all understand this, darkie we own, gentlemen. He's the only self-reproducing machine in the world, Gotta know how to run. I first met him in Africa as a young man when I ran a ship in the illegal slave running trade, before I settled down here in the very legal slave driving cotton trade. Boys, attend to the gentleman. I packed blacks into my ship until you couldn't walk the decks. Every morning we threw the dead and the rebellious overboard. They were not easy, those voyages. But we could turn a profit if we got 40% of them here alive.
I just like the sound.
My library is always at your disposal. Volumes on all the aspects of human slavery. But I can spell it for you in this one magnificent sculpture. Or in one story, which tells all one needs to know about the human being, in slavery or out. In the African trade, I met an old chief. I bought many of his people from him. Discussing handling slaves, he said, "Captain, in the soul of a free man, a little slavery and a lot weigh the same." So they do in the soul of a slave. So when you chain him, just as well chain him firm. Brilliant man. He was as black as coal. He'd find your views, Mr. Bennett, romantic. Danger.
Danger.
I know you all wonder why I keep these things in my house. They make you uncomfortable. Me too. That's why I keep them here. Ivory. Stone. Wood. Bronze.
I just like the sound.
Don't gawk, boy. Get that tray filled. Boy.
Boy.
Boy. Did you hear me?
Yes, master.
Don't talk back to me. Replenish the tray. I just ordered a darkie out of this room. Do you know anything about him? From his facial characteristics, his people probably came from the Songhai tribe. The area around Timbuktu. 300 years ago, they had a university there, where the most delicate operations were performed for cataracts of the eye. People came from all over the world to have their sight restored by these extraordinary black surgeons. I believe origins can crop up even after 10 generations, unless they're kept weeded out. What do we create? Surgeons? Sculptors? Or niggas? Or niggas?
Abolition. 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 Abolition.
The Nigga Export Company. That's a Max mix. It included from the documentary King Cotton in 1949, a clip from The Wolf of Wall Street, and a great clip from the movie entitled Slaves. It was in 1969 with Dionne Warwick and Ossie Davis. And Max, you know,
oh, I ended with Eazy-E.
As I'm listening, sorry?
And it ended with Eazy-E.
And it ended with Eazy-E, right. And I'm listening and I'm like, wow. So he says, okay, you know, in the mornings we would throw the dead and the rebellious overboard. And if we can get 40% of them there, we can turn a profit. You know, just showing, as we were already saying, how they pre-plan things. You know, because the only way you know that is if you're doing the number crunching and the planning. So they said, okay, we'll pack it so much so that you can't even walk through the ship. And if we can get 40% of them there, we're going to turn a profit.
Yeah, that just shows that they look at it as collateral damage, you know, acceptable losses. I remember at one point he said they went, I went from the illegal slave trade to the legal slave cotton trade. And
right.
That was exactly what was going on. These people who should have been in a freaking prison or shot for their crimes against humanity were allowed to come here and establish new fortunes, doing the exact same thing. But instead of bringing them over from Africa, they bred them, like literally bred human beings like you would breed wolves to finally get yourself a chihuahua.
Right. They said, what are we exporting? Surgeons? You know, and he said, no, we're exporting niggas.
And that's 1969. So they've always known what the real value was. The value was not in the product that was greasing the currency veins throughout the world. The value was in slavery. And it was a sick, twisted type of thing they had going on because, you know, everybody felt like they justified it by declaring that we were less than human, and we were, you know, close to apes, and they needed us. But also, they got this joy out of breaking a great people or enslaving a great people. He was expressing that, saying, you know, this guy comes from Timbuktu, and they were eye surgeons and great, you know, and I broke them. Look at them. And, you know, even if one pops up, I can break them too, you know. It reminds me of the Secretary of State who passed away recently. What was his name?
Donald Rumsfeld.
And how he owned Mount Misery. And Mount Misery is where they sent Frederick Douglass to be broken by the slave breaker. who had been breaking slaves there for generations. And then that house and that plantation and that land was bought by the Secretary of Frickin' Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, knowing very well exactly what the reputation and history of that house was. That's that twisted, evil joy you get out of knowing you're breaking somebody who's great. It's only something that a wicked person would understand or be able to even call a form of joy. But that's what we're dealing with.
And I'm imagining every time he had dinner at his home, you know, new guest over, he's bragging to them, yeah, this was the house where Frederick Douglass was sent. You know, he would even know the history because they take pride in certain things like that. They say, yeah, this is what this is. This is Mount Misery.
Mount Misery, yeah, where they sent him to be broken, like others like him had been broken before. And instead he became one of the greatest men this country has ever seen. We didn't deserve him, for sure. We don't even study him. Like, and he's one of the greatest that we've ever seen. I study him, you study him, and others who listen to this program has heard quite a bit of Frederick Douglass. But on average,
right,
he should be taught, like, standard in school. The speech that he gave in 1888 that denounced the emancipation as a stupendous fraud should be mandatory reading at every grade level from fifth all the way up to university. Like, you should know this speech happened. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? Like, this is what he said, and he broke it down in such detail as only he could. And we're running around here talking about the emancipation and Juneteenth and the 13th Amendment, talking about slavery ending as if he never said that. It's
wow.
A sick, sick world. And there's a lot of misinformation that's put out, and there's pride and ignorance. People had pride in ignorance and not wanting to know the truth, to accept what other people have said as the gospel without ever even checking it in, anything behind it. It's just accepting it. It drives me nuts, especially when I see my own people following, like walking in lockstep with white supremacists. Like, these people are saying and doing this. This is the source of the information, and you're down with them? It drives me nuts, man. I heard an interview recently Charles Blow did on the Black News Channel, right? And he had this general, Ty Sudell, and he wrote a book, I think it's called Ely White and Me or something like that. They'll talk about it on the clip. But he really broke down also as well what the bottom line was. For America to be America, white supremacy needs to exist. And the opposite of white supremacy is black slavery. So it's the yin and yang that keeps this country going. And it's never been a day where there hasn't been slavery legally happening in this country. All right, so feel free to throw in any comments or news. If not, we'll go ahead and do the BNC when you're ready.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead, because I just wanted to – so the book he wrote was called Robert E. Lee and Me, A Southerner's Reckoning with the Myth of the Lost Cause.
Mm-hmm. It's the lies we keep telling each other. And here we're trying our best to be right about at least one thing on Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org. We'll be right back.
Abolition.
Abolition.
Today.
Earlier this week, I mentioned how America is in the midst of another lost cause moment where Republicans attempting to play revisionist history in matters of race and oppression to push their version of American narratives. In his book, Robert E. Lee and Me, A Southerner's Reckoning with the Myth of the Lost Cause, Ty Siddeley uncovers the truth about the Confederacy and its primary goal during the Civil War, which was to subjugate and maintain enslavement of black people. Joining us to discuss the book and America's track record of painting false narratives to manipulate history is retired Brigadier General and professor and author, Ty Siddeley. Professor Siddeley, how are you?
I'm great, Charles. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, sir. So I made a comparison to, you know, what is happening now around critical race theory, defund the police and all forms of kind of race issues, and the 2024 presumed candidates all using the same language around America's not a racist country, to say that is kind of a lost cause moment in the vein of what was happening after the Civil War, although clearly a smaller version of it. How do you see what's happening now? Is that a fair comparison?
Well, Charles, I don't think the lost cause ever really went away. I mean, this myth that the Civil War, about the Civil War, stayed through the 20th century, and I think only now are we really beginning to understand how bad it was. And so the fact that many people are going back to those same lies, the big lie, the biggest lie in American history, it doesn't surprise me, because it's always been there. And it's such a huge part of our historical past. I mean, they were doing this in textbooks in the early part of the 20th century, where United Daughters of the Confederacy were burning books, enforcing textbooks to ensure that it said that the Civil War wasn't about slavery, that slaves were happy in their condition, just these monstrous lies. The textbooks I had in Virginia growing up as a kid also did the same thing to show segregation was great. Textbooks are always doing this, and the reason is history is dangerous. It goes after our myths and our identities, and when somebody challenges those myths and our identities, the reaction, as we've seen, is ferocious.
Yeah, this is from Michael Fanone, Metropolitan Police Officer. You're on trial right now, lying, and you want an Emmy, an Oscar? What are you trying to go for here? You're so full of shit, you little f***ing shit. You're a little f***ing man. I can slap you up the side of your head with a backhand and knock you out, you little f***. You're a punk f***. You're a lying f***. How about all the scummy black scum for 2 years, destroying our cities and burning them and stealing all that stores and everything? How about that, and assaulting cops and killing people? How about that, you that was on the goddamn capital. I wish they would have killed all you scumbags, because you people are scum. They stole the election from Trump, and you know that, you scumbag. And you, too bad they didn't beat the shit out of you. You're a piece of shit. You little scumbag.
What doesn't always have a shape? Almost never does it have a name. Maybe has a pitchfork, maybe has a tail, but evil is alive and well. It might walk upright from out of the inferno, maybe come and horseback through deep snow. It's ragged and fat, it's hungry as hell, and evil is alive and well. How evil is alive, evil is well. Evil is alive, evil is well. On your feet to the tower and yell, evil is alive and well. Maybe too humble to want to speak, may have a blood-soaked bird in its teeth. Smoke-filled skies and bees in the well, and evil is alive and well. Now maybe in a palace, maybe in the streets, maybe here among us on a crowded beach, maybe asleep in a roadside motel, but evil is alive and well. Now evil is alive, evil is well. Evil is alive, evil is well. Now on your feet to the tower and yell, that evil is alive, it's well. Down in every ditch, upon every hill, it's well. I've got my radio on, drowning the bells. Thank you. that's done and the day won't start. All I ever gave you was a broken heart. Well, it's hard to admit, but it's easy to tell that evil is alive and well. Now evil is alive, evil is well. Evil is alive, evil is well. Now on your feet to the tower and yell that evil is alive and well. Evil is alive, it's well. Evil is alive, it's well. Evil is alive and well.
So you just heard a clip from Charles Blow's show on the Black News Channel with the guest Brigadier General James Ty Seidule, S-E-I-D-U-L-E, for anyone who wanted to look him up. And that was followed by a call that was made to Mike Fanone. Mike Fanone was the D.C. police officer who had a heart attack during the insurrection that occurred on January 6th, and that was followed by Evil is Alive and Well by Jacob Dylan, the son of Bob Dylan. So a lot of stuff going on in that track right there, Max. Great job on that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, tonight's music and speeches really been impactful and powerful. You know, it took a year to put this show together, really, right?
Right.
It took a year to talk about King Cotton and how influential it was in what we now know as America. But we also uncovered the veil of that. We're not no longer pointing at inanimate objects or systems and saying, you know, it's that thing's fault. You know, it's not the war ain't on drugs. The war was on people. And it's slavery that made all of this possible, not the cotton, because it could have been sugar, it could have been tobacco, it could have been marijuana, it could have been any damn thing.
Right.
But it was the slavery that made it possible. And this mistelling of history is a very much watered-down version of all of that. We've heard the horror stories throughout the night, both past and present, from children to seniors, who have had to deal with the traumas of this type of setup we have here in America.
America. I can't say it as well as you say it. I've been working on it. America. Yeah, America. I think I got it now. And so that Trump supporter, you know, we play this one little track jokingly every time, but it sums up exactly what this woman
if we'd known you all were going to be this much trouble, we would have picked our own fucking cotton.
Right.
And so many people with that attitude right there.
Yep.
They have that same attitude right there. They even told this guy, this, you know, this Trump supporter, they all supposed to be about back the blue and all of this stuff. And he said, look, you know, I wish I'd have been down there because I would have killed all of you. He was calling them all kinds of scumbags, you know, after his testimony.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that, you know, we knew you would have been this much, probably picked our own fucking cotton. That was another one of those calls that people tend to make to black people or anyone that fights for us and tells us exactly that evil is alive and well, like Jacob Dylan said. It can be anywhere. Remember, right before the January 6th insurrection, treasonous insurrection, they blew up an entire city block over in Nashville. Like, blew up a whole city block. You know? Like, and they went down to another state with armed insurrectionists and tried to kidnap the governor. All of that was leading up to it. And they're retelling history now, so it only started on January 6th. Nothing happened before that.
Right. Even I have forgotten about Tennessee. That, yes, that was just, you know, what was it, about 2 weeks prior to that. It wasn't
long.
Yeah,
a whole city block blew it up.
Yeah, it wasn't long where we had the black councilwoman who had, you know, thankfully that there were other blacks who came in at gunpoint. They had to walk her to her office so she can go into her office. So it's a lot that went on during that. Then, you know, the focus is on January 6th because that's the one that got the international attention. But so many things led up to that, and it's just things that are just basically coming on the heels of what's been going on, you know, for 400-plus years.
Yeah, we're about at the point where we got to start giving our shout-outs to our sponsors and
where'd the time
stuff
go?
Like that. Yeah, it went pretty fast, didn't it?
Yeah.
I know, right? So before we do that, I want to put an ask out there. If you like what we're mm-hmm. doing here, if you're listening and you like what we're doing here and you want to help support us, you can always make a donation. We're a 501c3 tax deductible, the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center. Our Cash App is AbolitionCTR with a capital A and a capital C, AbolitionCTR. And our PayPal is AbolitionistCenter@gmail.com, AbolitionistCenter@gmail.com. Feel free to keep us going because, you know, a lot of this comes out of our pockets. But, you know, got to do what we got to do. Use your help.
Right.
Also remember to join in with the Shut 'Em Down 2021. I had a little part to play in the naming of that, which is kind of cool. So, you know, play your role in that. Put together an event and shut them down 2021 during August. And I want to say thank you to you for being here with me and to the people that listened today and are going to listen in the future. We really appreciate you. We couldn't do this without you. And most definitely to our international audience. We got a lot of listeners in Germany and England, as well as over in Africa as well. So shout out to all our fam there. And most importantly, shout out to those who are inside and feel like what we're saying is making an impact in the fight you're having. Thank you very much for the support.
Absolutely. And thank you to our sponsors, you know, Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, the I Am We Ubuntu Prison Advocacy Network, Sema Urge, Quakers Uplifting Racial Justice, the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center, Prismatic Dreams, and the Black Talk Radio Network. Also, remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/abolitiontoday. Subscribe to that page for all the news, information, and music you hear on this program. We're available on all major podcast platforms, and we're simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. Also, remember to join the movement at abolishslavery.us to become part of the solution. And also remember to use, on any time you're making posts on social media, use the hashtag #EndTheException. Also, go to endtheexception.com, fill out the information so the information can be sent directly to your state legislatures to showing that you're in support of the 28th Amendment, which is going to fully abolish slavery in the United States. Definitely getting to our favorite part of the program, the Bridging the Gap segment. And this time we're bringing back an oldie but goodie. Ozzie Davis is going to read Frederick Douglass's Part 17, The Three Boxes, followed by Lauryn Hill, Black Rage. We'll be back on Sunday, August 8th, inshallah, God willing, with another masterclass on slavery abolition. So until next week, think about abolition today. Peace. Peace to you, Max. Love you, brother.
Peace, sir.
Abolition. Abolition. Today.
It was my good fortune to be present at Abraham Lincoln's inauguration in March 1865, after his re-election as president, and to hear on that occasion his remarkable inaugural address. A series of important events followed soon after the second inauguration of Mr. Lincoln, conspicuous amongst which was the fall of Richmond. The collapse of the rebellion was now not long delayed, though it did not perish without adding to its long list of atrocities, one which sent a thrill of horror throughout the civilized world in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, a man so amiable, so kind, so humane and honest, that one is at a loss to know how he could have had an enemy on earth. I was in Rochester when the news of Mr. Lincoln's death was received. Our citizens, not knowing what else to do in the agony of the hour, betook themselves to City Hall. Though all hearts ached for utterance, few felt like speaking. But I was called upon and spoke out of the fullness of my heart. And, happily, I gave expression to so much of the soul of the people present that my voice was several times utterly silenced by the sympathetic tumult of the great audience. I have resided long in Rochester and made many speeches there which more or less touched the hearts of my hearers. But never till this day was I brought into such close accord with them. When the war for the Union was substantially ended and peace dawned upon the land, when the gigantic system of American slavery was finally abolished and forever prohibited by the organic law of the land, a strange feeling came over me. My great and exceeding joy over these stupendous achievements, especially over the abolition of slavery, which had been the deepest desire and the great labor of my life, was slightly tinged with a feeling of sadness. The anti-slavery platform had performed its work, and my voice was no longer needed. What should I do? The answer was not long in coming. Though slavery was abolished, the wrongs of my people were not ended. Though they were not slaves, they were not yet quite free. No man can be truly free whose liberty is dependent upon the thought, feeling, and action of others, and who has himself no means in his own hands for guarding, protecting, defending, and maintaining that liberty. Yet the Negro, after his emancipation, was precisely in this state of destitution. The law, on the side of freedom, is of great advantage only where there is power to make that law respected. The government felt that it had done enough for the former slaves. It had made them free, and henceforth they must make their own way in the world. Yet they had none of the conditions for self-preservation or self-protection. They were free from the individual masters, but the slaves of society. The old master class simply drove them off the plantation and told them they were no longer wanted there. I therefore soon found that the Negro still had a cause and that he needed my voice and pen with others to plead for it. I called upon the government to assist the landless Negroes of the South by colonizing them on lands abandoned by the slaveholders, as they had retreated before the advancing Union army. I urged further that these former slaves be equipped with implements to till the soil and arms to defend themselves. From the first, I saw no chance of bettering the condition of the freedman until he should cease to be merely a freedman and should become a citizen. I insisted that there was no safety for him, nor for anybody else in America outside the American government, that to guard, protect, and maintain his liberty, the freedman should have the ballot, that the liberties of the American people were dependent upon the ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box, that without these, no class of people could live and flourish in this country. And this was now the word for the hour with me, and the word to which the people of the North willingly listened when I spoke. However, regarding, as I did, the elective franchise as one of the great powers by which all civil rights are obtained, enjoyed, and maintained under our form of government, and the one without which freedom to any class is delusive if not impossible, I set myself to work with whatever force and energy I possessed to secure this power for the recently emancipated millions.
Two-thirds a person, rapings and beatings and suffering that worsens. Black human packages tied up in strings. Black rage can come from all these kinds of things. Black
white race founded on blatant denial. Greed economics, subsistence survival, deafening silence and social control. Black rage is founded on wounds in the soul. When the dogs bite, when the bees sting, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember all these kinds of things, and then I don't fear so bad. Black race founded, fed us self-hatred, lies and abuse. While we waited and waited, spiritual treason is grid and it rages. Black rage is founded on these kinds of things. Black rage is founded on training and training, finding your freedom to stop your complaining, poisoning your water while they say it's raining. Progress of human contortion. Black rage is founded on these kinds of things. When the dogs bite, when the beating, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember all these kinds of things, and then I don't fear so bad. Free the prize of this mental illusion, forcing you back into perfect confusion, like human trafficking or bloodshed building. Black rage is founded on these kinds of things.
Abolition. Abolition. Today.